experimentation.
Vision.
The next idea.
People mean very different things whenever they talk about innovation.
Over the past few years, makerspaces have become more and more understood and popular. When you think of a makerspace, you could well imagine something like a shiny industrial warehouse with 3D printers, laser engravers, metalworking tools. But makerspaces can be different than that and more than that. Our latest contributors to The Next Idea have found a makerspace can become an important focal point for the whole community. Kristen Fonticciaro is here with us. She teaches at the University of Michigan School of Information, where she heads up a program called Making in Michigan Libraries. They help libraries around Michigan set up MAKE programs designed for the communities they serve. And one of the libraries that received a Making in Michigan Libraries grant is the Benzonia Library. Librarian Amanda McLaren is with us as well. Hello to both of you. And Kristen, let's get us on the same page. Just what is a makerspace?
Well, there's a lot of different meanings depending on who you ask. You're definitely right about the industrial makerspace in a large area that would have those high-tech, high-technology tools. But even in the city of Ann Arbor, in a place like MakerWorks, you'd also see welding tools and sewing machines and embroidery machines and machines to work with wood. And so I like to think that it's really a movement about creativity and making happen what you want to make happen. And really reconnecting with the world before smartphones and swiping everything, where we feel good creating things. We like that sense of self-expression. We like that sense of self-achievement that comes along with having created something ourselves.
Something I think that we've kind of lost.
I would say for sure in the middle class. I would not say so much in every economic class. We have some folks that still make out of necessity, and I think that's a really important point to make. Mm-hmm. But I think the ability for us to come together, use our hands, feel productive, whether it's with a high-end, high-tech tool or with a pair of knitting needles, we want people to feel that sense of coming together, of being together, enjoying that interaction that comes when I see what you're making and it ups my ante just a little bit.
All right. So then taking it into this Making in Michigan Libraries program, was it a problem you were trying to address or was it something you were trying to give to communities? What was the goal?
Well, I'm a Michigan native and I love my state and I really have always loved the many types of communities we have in the state. In talking about possible funding ideas with our colleagues at the Institute of Museum and Library Services who fund this project, one of the things they noted was that professional development was reaching some areas of the state and not others, and they really encouraged us to look at parts of the state that were maybe underrepresented. And that helped us come up with an idea that we are very passionate about libraries. I love libraries. I am a tourist of libraries. But also that a library working on its own without its community just creates a siloed program. So we invited in educators and civic leaders and after-school program folks so that people could also see this work is happening in little bits and starts in your community already. You have handicraftsmen in your community already. How do you build on that together? There is no better place than Benzonia to watch how this is playing out.
Well, Amanda, what did you want to get out of the program when you decided to apply for a Making in Michigan Libraries grant?
I have to agree. I think it's all about community. And that was our main focus, to bring the community together, to get people to look at each other, to interact with each other. We have a very strong community in that people do pull together. But as far as bringing the kids in, just helping them find their passion, helping them find something that will really ignite a spark so that they feel driven to do something and to really participate in something.
Certainly, the more people coming into the library, the better for the library. I mean, it's got to be sometimes a challenge to stay relevant, especially, as you say, to the kids, the way perhaps the library was relevant to me as a baby boomer.
To some extent, but we're also in an area where internet doesn't reach everybody. And, you know, the library is more of a necessity here than it is in a lot of places. But I like to think they're here because they want to be as well.
Well, and the more things you can offer, then that works. And just so we're all clear, are you bringing in money? Are you bringing in training? When a grant is given, what's a library getting?
It isn't a formal sub-grant program, but we started by looking for 8 places that could host multi-day professional development. Not just fly in and fly out, you get your 2 hours and you leave, but where do we come and we really settle and recognize that the hidden component in makerspaces that's always underestimated is the people. And we often had cases in the summertime where we were in Alpena. One person said, well, you know, there's a marine lab that does underwater remote operated vehicle stuff with kids. And the woman a couple seats down said, yes, I run that program. So here was something that the community was proud of, but they hadn't ever met before. Mm. And so thinking about how does the power of the university come in and create some excitement, sort of in the Stone Soup way, that I hope that what we do is help communities to come together to make the decisions that they may not realize are right under their noses. Benzoni already knew it was right under their noses.
So, Amanda, tell us what kind of maker programs that you've been able to offer.
Some of the things that we were already doing here at the library before they came in, we have this group of amazing supporters, volunteers, and in particular, two of my staff members that double as volunteers as well. They are the repurposeful librarians. What they do, they take and repurpose materials and make crafts. For example, they made these lamps out of old books and, you know, Mod Podge the lampshades. Just beautiful, looks incredible. They take all these items that they make and they sell them at local craft fairs and then take all the money that they make from those items and put them into a crafting program here at the library, which is just a tremendous asset. I mean, there's so much that we couldn't do without what they are putting into the library here. And so we're very grateful about that. They take classes and learn what they can and then bring it here and teach it to our patrons for free.
It's very, very clear that as I hear Amanda talk about all these programs, this is really a nimble concept because every library and every community will have its own set of wants, needs, priorities. And so what you've come up with lets them do it. But then now here's the next question. How do we grow these kinds of programs?
For me, and our philosophy as a program has really been, you look to your community for what your community needs, and you start there. And what I'm really interested in is not the fad of making, but the sustainability. I grew up in a household where we made stuff out of junk all the time. It was very rare to go to the craft store or the fabric store and get special supplies for things. But there were always scrap fabrics and pieces of wood. And there were supplies in the pantry for baking and cooking. And each of the children in our family still practices those, whatever sort of niche we had today. And I remember those feelings of sort of creating your world and your own agency. And when a library does what Amanda's library is doing and looks at, we're a small budget, where do we make the biggest impact? What is our community asking for? I mean, Amanda's had so many meetings with her new superintendent about how do we support what's happening in the school. Where I think it will be a fad will be, here's the checklist of what other people have, that's what we should have. And oftentimes starting with children and starting with the sense that they have a natural sense of discovery then helps us move into how do families engage with libraries? How do we make opportunities for adults to be as invested? So I'm thinking we had a MakerFest evening when we were in Benzonia and there were so many grandparents who came with grandchildren, and they were so safe in the space that they sort of dispersed as a family into what they were most interested in. And I remember chiding a grandfather. In all the other cities, the adults hung back and let kids do things. So I jokingly say to this grandfather, oh, now when are you going to make something? And he says, I've already made three etched glasses over on that other table. And I think that that is a real strength of looking at how smaller communities come together because some of those separations aren't in place. So really thinking about what is echoing in our community, what is resonating in our community, starting small and seeing it as a multi-year process. There are a lot of folks, I mean, you mentioned 3D printers, and that's always the big inside joke with makerspaces is that everybody has one because everybody's expected to have one, but they're usually broken. And I remember when we were in Benzonia, we were one step away from ours being broken. It's like the party trick, but ultimately, it's got some limitations from how broad the participation can be, how wide-ranging the participation can be. What are the things that draw communities together and empower them to take the next step? That's the real question.
Well, I won't let you go, Amanda, without telling us about the Power Tools for Women program. I looked on your website, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a very exciting program. They brought in one of the employees from our local hardware store, who was just wonderful, and he talked about power tool safety and best practices with power tools. And then all the women that were there went ahead and made the lamps out of the books. And that was a really exciting class. And we actually had to offer that one twice because it was so popular. And things like that, that just, where do you go to learn about power tool basics? If you don't have someone at home teaching you, how do you learn?
So you go to a makerspace.
You do. So that was very exciting. And I do want to talk about the Harry Potter satellite class that we had, because that was just another fantastic opportunity to let the imagination run wild. And so there was a class offered where you can come in and create the elixir of life and the recipe for a rejuvenation tonic. And these are all, everything that was used is stuff that you would find in your kitchen, just with the fun spin, you know, the frog spawn and, you know, stuff like that. But to see the looks on the kids' faces as they participated in that, because so many of these kids have read the Harry Potter books and have loved them, and they each received a wand when they arrived, and they received their OWL certificate when they left. And it was just an amazing moment for so many of these kids. And it was just so fun. And everything is like that. There has not been a time that we haven't offered a program for the kids that they have not walked out of here just excited to be doing something new and different and to have opportunities. And we're just so thankful to be able to offer that.
Amanda McLaren, librarian at the Benzonia Library, and Kristen Fonticciaro, University of Michigan School of Information. Thanks to both of you so much for being with us on The Next Idea.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for The Next Idea on Stateside comes from Michigan Economic Development Corporation, committed to marketing Michigan to drive job growth and investment in our communities. MichiganBusiness.org.